From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today's Tuesday, November 2nd.
She didn't become a feminist, Rena, because she read books. She became a feminist because she lived her life as a woman and saw the obstacles and saw the difficulties she and so many others faced.
That was Steve Roberts, husband to the late legendary journalist Cokie Roberts. I spoke with him about his wife and his new book about her, Cokie, A Life Well Lived. It's out today. But first, your morning headlines. The UN's climate change conference, or COP26, is underway. Over the weekend, world leaders at the G20 meeting that preceded this summit failed to approve any binding climate measures. But at COP26, the Prime Minister of India, country that's a massive carbon polluter, pledged the nation would reach net zero emissions by 2070. Meanwhile, in the U.S., Democratic Senator Joe Manchin is refusing to guarantee support for President Biden's spending bill that's part of Build Back Better over fiscal concerns.
None of us should ever misrepresent to the American people what the real cost of legislation is. While I've worked hard to find a path to compromise, it's obvious compromise is not good enough for a lot of my colleagues in Congress.
The giant spending bill includes more than $500 trillion on policies to cut carbon emissions that contribute to accelerating climate change. In hearings on Monday, Supreme Court justices asked pressing questions about SB 8, the Texas law banning abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy. After allowing the law to take effect on September 1st, even the conservative justices appeared skeptical. The law is unusual, allowing private citizens to sue anyone who assists a person in getting an abortion. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, conservative, said it exploited a loophole. The Supreme Court usually takes a few months after hearings to hand down a decision. But on December 1st, the court will hear a more direct challenge to abortion rights concerning Mississippi. In New York City, 9,000 city workers are on unpaid leave after refusing the jab. The city's COVID-19 vaccine mandate went into effect on Monday and did lead to a jump in inoculations. 84% of NYPD staff are now vaccinated. That's up from 70% a few weeks ago. But another 12,000 employees have filed for exemptions. They'll stay on the job while the city reviews applications. Mayor Bill de Blasio said he didn't expect any disruption to city services as a result of the 6% reduction in the city's workforce. In Chicago, meanwhile, a judge paused a similar vaccine requirement for city police until their union's objections can be heard by an arbitrator. The mandate would take effect on December 31st. Journalist Cokie Roberts left behind an outsized legacy when she passed away 2 years ago. Her work as co-host of ABC News' This Week Sunday morning broadcast inspired me to study politics and to become a journalist. But today, I'm speaking with someone who truly knew her, beyond the immaculate presentation she delivered on screen and over the radio to report the news, Steve Roberts, her husband, my longtime professor and mentor, and the man who taught me about journalism in Washington. He's out with a new book about his late spouse, Cokie, A Life Well Lived. Prof, thank you for joining us.
What a pleasure to see you.
I finished this book and I can't tell you, I just felt so fulfilled. She was really a mentor. She championed women's representation in media. Her career was extensive. And in the book, you say she wasn't a full-time journalist until she was 34. But she made up for lost time, crashing through glass ceilings at NPR and ABC with her impressive mind, impish wit, and infectious laugh. Tell me about those glass ceilings.
When we first got married, she actually was hosting her own TV show in Washington. She was 22 years old. But it was life in 1966, Rena, that we didn't even have a conversation about whose job was more important. I had gotten a job as a reporter on the New York Times city staff, and we just assumed that she would leave her job and move to New York and be with me. And we moved four times from my job, to New York, to California, to Athens, Greece, and back to Washington over 11 years. So the first glass ceiling was simply the culture. It was the assumption that men's lives took precedent, men's career took precedent. But also, as we moved around, you know, she was such a talented and energetic person that she always sought out work and had a great deal of trouble finding jobs. You could have a job being someone's secretary, you could have a job making copies on a Xerox machine or making coffee, but actually doing important work, it was largely closed. And by the time we came back to Washington in 1977, some things had changed. but not a lot. There were pioneering women. When Cokie first got hired at NPR, she was still Unusual. And when she joined ABC 11 years later, she was still the first woman to be a regular panelist on a Sunday morning TV show. So she lived through a revolution. And there were times when it was very hard on her. There were times when she talked about being depressed and being thwarted and being sidelined. You know, she was two people at the same time. On one hand, because of the age she was, she never believed she would have a career, certainly not a career, anything approaching the scale that it became. But at the same time, the talent was always there, you know, the drive was always there. So when she did become, you know, breakthrough, I was the last person to be surprised.
She was just such a huge force. But you talk about the revolutions that she was able to live through. She was able to champion causes without being mean or gruff or abrasive. And I think we are looking at America today, the need for diversity, pushing for women to be in higher positions. How was Cokie Roberts able to champion causes without coming off as being gruff or intrusive or isolating?
Well, some of it was her Southern upbringing. There was just an inherent graciousness there. Some of it was her religious faith was very important to her. And there was a sense of charity and a generosity. But boy, when it came to defending and promoting women, she was absolutely determined, partly because of the difficulty she herself had faced. She didn't become a feminist, Rena, because she read books. She became a feminist because she lived her life as a woman and saw the obstacles and saw the difficulties she and so many others faced. And that created this determination to use whatever leverage she had to fight for other women and to promote other women.
Tell us a little bit about the role of motherhood and faith in Cokie's life. That was a big deal for her.
Well, motherhood was very important to her, both in terms of her own life and in terms of her advice she gave to other young women. As you well know, as a mother yourself, she always said to young women, don't give up this possibility, don't give up this dimension of yourself. So, I mean, no matter what else she did, she always put her kids first. She always made time for them. She, there's one story about our daughter, Becca, was in the sixth grade, and Cokie had gone out to her elementary school, you know, for one of those bring your parent to school days to tell us what kind of work you're doing. So Cokie, at the time, was covering Congress for NPR, so she brought out her tape recorder and her press badges and showed the girls what it was like to be a reporter. So a couple of weeks later, it was Halloween. So Cokie goes tearing out to Becca's elementary school to watch the kids in their Halloween costumes march through the neighborhood. And Rena, there were all these sixth grade girls wearing blue suits and carrying tape recorders.
Wow.
And they were all dressed up as Cokie Roberts for Halloween.
Wow. That must have been incredible for her to see. We're going to pause, take a quick break, and we'll be right back with journalist Steve Roberts, who's out with a new book about his wife, journalist Cokie Roberts. Cokie, A Life Well Lived. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount. I'm joined by journalist Steve Roberts, a longtime mentor who has a new book out about his late wife, iconic journalist Cokie Roberts. She was such a big believer in unearthing stories of women in American history. She pushed hard for the sign outside of Mount Vernon to read, home of not just George Washington, but Martha Washington as well. She wrote books on the subject of women that we have forgotten, founding mothers. Why was that so important to her, to go back and relook at American history from a female lens?
I think there were several reasons for it. One was she had seen in her own life the roles that her mother and other women of her age had played. Her mother and Lady Bird Johnson and Pauline Gore and Betty Ford were the modern incarnations of Abigail Adams and Dolly Madison. She saw the enormous impact that they had. In fact, there's a great story in the book, like when her father had been in Congress for 30 years, killed in a plane crash in 1972, Lyndy decides to run for his seat after he died. And so she calls Lady Bird Johnson, her lifelong friend, to tell her before she read about it in the papers, and said, Bird, I just want to tell you, announcing that I'm running for Hale's seat. And Mrs. Johnson said, well, Lindy, darling, that's great, but how are you going to do it without a wife?
That's a great story.
And so she had had this model. Cokie had seen these women as advisors, as supporters, as counselors, as promoters of their husbands. So that was very much part of it. This was a template for her. But beyond that, she talks about covering Congress and realizing she didn't know much about the founding fathers and their families. And that led to, you know, founding mothers, Ladies of Liberty, Capital Dames, three of these extremely important books that really retold the story of American history through the eyes of these women and documented their contributions. And just, if that's all she had ever done in her life, it was just those three books, it would have been a priceless contribution. And I talked to a lot of historians about this, and they said, look, yes, there had been a lot of work in the academy, a lot of work with academics, feminist historians, and, you know, focus on that. But Cokie had the ability to bring this story to the general public that no one else had.
That's so true. In 2002, at the age of 58, she decided to step away. Mm-hmm. I would argue in the midst of an incredible career where people like me wanted to see her every week and get her take on Washington and get her to decode Washington. Why'd she step away?
The single biggest reason was that, you know, her whole family had been in politics. Both of her parents served in Congress. Her older brother and sister both ran for Congress. Neither one of them won. She used to say, everybody in my family has run for Congress, but the only one who never lost an election was my mother. And being a journalist certainly satisfied part of her deep-dyed instinct to public service. It didn't satisfy all of it. And so by leaving her post as anchor of the show, she transferred her contractual status with ABC from a full-time employee to a contract. That enabled her, under their ethics rules, to become more of an advocate. She joined the board of an organization called Save the Children, this worldwide relief organization. She was particularly interested in the education of girls and young women. She deeply believed that if you educate girls, you have this enormous benefit in terms of stability of a country. And so she went around the world learning about these programs, advocating for these programs.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Steve Roberts, who's out with a new book called Cokie, A Life Well Lived. You're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to The Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount. I'm joined by journalist Steve Roberts, who's out with a new book about his wife, Cokie Roberts. It's called Cokie, A Life Well Lived. You know, Cokie lived through the Trump years. We had a good friend of yours and Cokie's on recently on the Recount Daily Pod, George Will. And I asked him about sort of these Trump years, and he believed this was a fever that would pass. What was Cokie's sense about how Washington has changed and how divided our country has become?
Her view of Trump was interesting. She, alone among, I think, a lot of Washington pundits, actually predicted he would win. A lot of people dismissed him in ways she did not. Not because she liked him. She sensed his power and his appeal and sensed that the Democrats were far too smug, not understanding this underlying power that he was generating. And she was always a believer in Congress as an institution. If you have a commitment to the institution beyond party and partisanship, you believe in compromise. You believe in the legislative process. You believe that the other side might be rivals, but they're not enemies. And I think that that deeply bothered her as politics became more and more tribal and party loyalties became more divisive. She had many reasons for believing this, but she always pointed out that when she was growing up here in Washington, a lot of members of Congress brought their families here. That many of her girlhood friends were children of Republican politicians. One of her best friends was the daughter of Bill Miller, who was Barry Goldwater's running mate in 1964. Mm-hmm. He's a very conservative congressman from upstate New York. And she said, I used to go to Miller House all the time and, you know, play board games in the basement. There were other families that they went to church with, other families that she went to school with. And so she always felt that that had been lost and that and those threads of relationships and respect.
You work with young people as a professor at George Washington University. What do you hope this next generation might get from this book?
I think there are two things. One is public and one is private. I think as a public figure, as a journalist, she embodied a deep love for politics and a deep love for public service and a deep belief that this was an honorable work. So many reporters, I think, are cynical about politics and politicians. Never cynical. There was not a cynical bone in her body. She, as I say, a lot of it came from her family, not just her immediate family, but throughout history. But that respect and that mutual, you know, has been lost, that love of politics. And many nights, we covered Congress together for 8 years. When I was at the New York Times, she was at NPR. And we would leave in the evening after a day of work, and she'd look up at the Capitol Dome, lit up at night. And she never, ever failed. Isn't it beautiful? And that symbolized her faith in America, and her faith in democracy, and her faith in the political process. So that's one, that's the public Cokie. But the private Cokie, as we've been discussing, you can be successful at that and not forget your humanity. You can be a celebrity, you can be a success, you can be famous, and not sacrifice your personal and private life. She never, ever, ever changed. She never, I don't care how famous she was, you know that she was always the same person when the camera went off as when the camera went off. And it was a person who lived the gospel. You've mentioned several times her faith. It was an extremely important part of who she was. She really did believe that every person was, as she was taught as a very young child, that every person is shaped in the image of God. And that's how she treated people. And that's how she lived her life till the day she died.
The book is called Cokie, A Life Well Lived. Thank you so much, Professor Roberts.
Thank you, Rena.
And now let's look ahead at what's happening today. It's Election Day, and it may be an off-year election, but the governorships of Virginia and New Jersey are on the ballot. In Virginia, Democrat Terry McAuliffe faces off against Republican Glenn Youngkin, who's kept intentional distance from former President Trump and from any endorsement. The former president lost the state to Joe Biden by 10 points last year, so a Republican victory could signal a big change in favor of the GOP ahead of midterm elections next year. Over New Jersey, Democratic Governor Phil Murphy hopes to become the first Democrat to win re-election in 44 years. His opponent, businessman Jack Cittarelli, will vie to keep the curse intact. Advisors to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention meet today to discuss recommending Pfizer's vaccine for children between the ages of 5 and 11. The FDA approved the vaccine last week. If the CDC does the same, the organization's director will have to give final approval. The White House expects a green light and has been preparing to ship millions of vaccines to pediatricians across the country. Shots with kid-sized doses could begin as early as Wednesday. And it could be a big day for more than 10,000 employees at John Deere. They've been on strike since October 14th. Members of the United Auto Workers vote on a new six-year contract after rejecting an earlier deal last month. Reports show the tentative contract includes an $8,500 signing bonus, an immediate 10% raise, plus a 5% increase in the deal's third and fifth years. One of the reasons John Deere workers felt they had leverage, the company's profits have more than doubled so far this fiscal year to $4.7 billion. This is The Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount. My thanks to journalist Steve Roberts for being on the show. And if you like this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to The Recount Daily Pod and leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen.